You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hi, everyone. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape, and this is This Week in Cardiology for January 29th, 2016. This week, I'm going to talk about a draft proposal from medical editors that would require data sharing, women in atrial fibrillation, an ICD lead recall, vasovagal syncope in driving, and pre-diabetes. The lead story this week is that an international group of medical editors have drafted a proposal saying that clinical trialists must publicly share patient-level data as a condition of publication. This is a huge story. It changes the status quo. Right now, a journal reader sees tables and figures in the medical journals, but the actual data is often not publicly available. As drafted, authors of papers would have 6 months to release this data after publication of the trial. Now think about how this changes academic medicine. Currently, clinical trialists think up these trials. They plan the trials. They gather the data, and then they write the study up. But they don't just write up one study. They take this database, and they could publish many studies down the road. But as drafted, these data sets would now be available to any number of clinical scientists who could reanalyze it and ask different questions. I'm in favor of this for four reasons. One, it will surely improve the problem of replication. Science is based on replication, but right now scientists have no incentive to do it. Second, transparency of data would surely increase the confidence and trust in the results. Third, data sharing would enhance collaboration, and here we have to look no further than the Human Genome Project. Finally, data sharing would increase the amount of knowledge that we get from a single experiment. Now, I'm not that naive. I realize there'll be barriers and hurdles to get over. I mean, first is patient privacy, but another, honestly, is giving the original researchers credit for the idea and the first work. And that point about publications being the currency of academic medicine is not a small one. But perhaps this proposal will stimulate reform in how scientists progress through their academic careers. Much like what is happening in the payment of doctors, could there be a change coming in the incentives for clinical scientists? But finally, and most importantly, the take-home message is that getting the most from this research is a debt that we owe patients who volunteered to be experimented on. Second topic is women in AFib. Now, in the CHADS-VASc risk score for patients with AFib, using female gender is somewhat controversial. Some experts question its utility. And speaking of using data extraction, a team of researchers led by a group in the UK extracted data from 30 cohort studies with over 4 million participants. They published their work in the BMJ, and they found that atrial fibrillation in women was associated with a higher risk of stroke, CV mortality, heart failure, and overall death than AFib in men. Women with AFib were at twofold greater risk of stroke than men. Now, to me, this data on 4 million participants strengthens the use of female gender in the CHADS-VASc score. The thing we don't know, and is important, is how women fare with anticoagulation compared with men. Next topic is an ICD lead recall. The FDA has issued a Class 1 safety advisory on the St. Jude Medical OptiSure dual coil ICD lead. There are only a small number of these leads in place. I reached out to my friend and ICD lead expert, Dr. Jay Schloss from Cincinnati, by email. He doesn't think this appears to be a systemic issue, but rather a limited manufacturing issue. Jay told me that he went through a year's worth of MAUDE database reports and found only one example consistent with the mechanism of failure in this recall. I mentioned this story because OptiSure is St. Jude's next generation of ICD leads. It's a successor to Durata, and it's only been out for 1 year. recall that the Riata Durata abrasion issues took many years to come to light. Jay told me, though, that the OptiSure early data on OptiSure is favorable, but he noted that you need more than 1 year to determine lead reliability. Of course, the other reason why I mentioned an ICD recall story is that it emphasizes the fact that ICDs are not insurance policies and that they come with trade-offs. And one of these trade-offs is the possibility of hardware recalls like this. Next topic is vasovagal syncope and driving. Now, I'm often asked to play judge on this. John, you need to see this patient before he can drive. The obvious concern with patients who have vasovagal syncope is that if a syncopal event occurred without enough of a prodrome and a person was driving, that could obviously have catastrophic consequences. The thing is, this area is a data-free zone until perhaps this week. Now, again, we're going to talk about data extraction from previous studies. A group from Calgary, Canada, looked at data from two RCTs in patients with vasovagal syncope. They took this data and they compared the risk of having a car accident in patients who were in the trials versus the general population. They published their work in JACC-EP, and they found that the risk of a car accident in the general population is 19 times greater than it was for patients with vasovagal syncope in this trial. I know this is not perfect data. There's certainly, this is a limited generalizability, right? These are young patients. There were only hundreds of patients in these trials, and they were followed for short periods of time. But at least it's a little bit of data in a data-free zone. And to be honest, it fits with my bias. And one of my biases is I rarely tell patients with vasovagal syncope they can't drive. I mean, let's just think about relative risk. Cardiologists love relative risks, right? What is the relative risks of driving with vasovagal syncope versus the relative risk of driving while texting? I'm a cyclist. I ride to work every day. And I tell you that I'm far more fearful of a driver who is distracted than a driver who has vasovagal syncope. Final topic is prediabetes. And here I'm riled up. I'm very concerned and even dismayed about a new public service campaign to raise awareness about prediabetes. I'm sorry, but the cynic in me just sees this as more disease creation. I'm solidly in the camp of Professors John Yudkin and Victor Montori, who wrote an editorial analysis in the British Medical Journal on prediabetes, and I'll link that paper. They led their paper with a quote from Aldous Huxley. Here's the quote: "Medical science has made such tremendous progress that there is hardly a healthy human left." I mean, it's bad enough that we have treatments for risk factors, but now the American Diabetes Association wants to gin up possible treatments for being at risk for a risk factor? The best way to prevent diabetes and prediabetes is to eat less crap and exercise more, and we hardly need to give people a label to tell them that. So that's it for this week in cardiology. I want to remind you to look at this podcast and to see other podcasts. You can go to www.medscape.com/TWIC. Until next week, this is John Mandrola from the heart.org on Medscape.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from the heart.org on Medscape.